Carl, ready for our next adventure?
No, Avi. Ever since the time machine, I've been seeing sparks in my sleep, and my teeth taste like peppermint.
Okay, fine. As if every college student doesn't have the classic, minty, time travel teeth.
They don't.
Agree to disagree. Besides, it's been a long week, and with winter rolling in, maybe it's a good time to stay in and, you know, watch some movies.
With no time travel, right?
Ugh, fine. With no time travel.
I'm No Expert, an Indiana University Media School podcast. This time we have Novotny Lawrence, Associate Professor and Director of the Black Film Center and Archive, talking about the concept of blaxploitation and what it means for us.
I'm here with Carl's here too. You can hear Carl now.
Yeah, you sure can. Yeah. I'm here.
Yeah, it's fantastic. We're here with the wonderful. Go ahead and introduce yourself. I want to make sure I'm pronouncing your name right.
Yeah, no problem at all. I'm Dr. Novotny Lawrence. I am an associate professor in cinema and media studies here in the Media School, and I'm also the director of the Black Film Center and Archive.
Fantastic. I'm Avraham Forrest, the host of I'm No Expert, and this is my producer, Carl.
Hello, I'm Carl.
Yeah, Carl.
Hi, Carl.
And we're talking today about, I guess, black cinema in general, but that's sort of a wide umbrella. So I guess to start, can you introduce the sort of research you do and have done?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you all for having me on. I'm always excited to come and talk on podcasts about my research. And more importantly, just kind of about black film, because as I always tell people, none of this is really about me. It's about the artists and the scholars and the films and actors and all those things. So I'll start. Yeah. If generally speaking, and I say this with all humility, if anybody knows my work in the field, it's generally because of my writing on black exploitation cinema. It's a period of filmmaking that lasted for about 5 years, started in 1970, goes till about 1975. Films like Shaft, Superfly, Cotton Comes to Harlem, Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song, which, yes, that is the actual title of a film. If you spell it out, make sure bad has two A's and ass has five S's on the end. So that's really serious. In addition to that, Coffee, Foxy Brown, Cleopatra Jones, there are any number of films from that period that I started researching. This was around the late 90s, and I got into looking at blaxploitation cinema because when I started studying African-American cinematic representation, I came to discover that no one had really written a single book that was solely devoted to blaxploitation cinema. I knew that those films were significant. I had to figure out how and why, and I made it my mission as a scholar to bring more attention to blaxploitation films. And so a lot of my research has been about that, writing about films like Blackula, about the parody film Black Dynamite, which came out in 2009, so on and so forth. So books, journal articles, book chapters, all of those things.
And you mentioned also working with black horror. Mm-hmm. Is that within the sphere of black exploitation films?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. Yes, it actually is, because a lot of people, you'll hear them talk about black exploitation or black exploitation cinema as a genre. And that's one of the things, the myths that I try to correct in my work. And I think that some scholars are hesitant to embrace it, but it's true. Blaxploitation is really a movement. It comes out of really specific characteristics that are specific to the time. So the civil rights movement, this historic misrepresentation of blacks in cinema, and then that Hollywood at that moment was struggling financially. It's not like they decided all of a sudden, we've been treating black people badly. Let's be nice. No, they wanted to make money. So they tapped into the black audience, which was often ignored, and this movement kind of explodes out of it. Now, when it began with Cotton Comes to Harlem, with Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song and other films, no one set out to make a blaxploitation film. That term was coined later as an insult by Junius Griffin, who at the time was the former president of a Beverly Hills branch of the NAACP. And he said, essentially, we're tired of this blaxploitation in films. I'm paraphrasing. And then critics took a hold of it and combined the word black and exploitation, and we get blaxploitation. And all these films, producers in Hollywood, directors, film companies start making all these movies. And out of this movement comes all these genre films. So Shaft is a detective film. Cotton Comes to Harlem is kind of a crime detective film. But then we got movies like Blackula or Black Dracula, which is a horror film, right? And so it is a movie that's made. You get Scream, Blackula, Scream, the sequel, Blackenstein, which is Black Frankenstein. I know it's ridiculous, and the film is just as bad as the title. In addition to that, you also get what studios were trying to name The Blackercist, which is a black-themed version of The Exorcist. They later rename it Abby, and it does really well at the box office, but it's also such a ripoff of The Exorcist that they have to pull it from theaters because of copyright infringement. So, yeah, there are all kinds of films. Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde is another blaxploitation horror film. So the two do meet.
So you gave us some really good examples there. But what is the prototypical? Is it accurate to call these blaxploitation? Is the term blaxploitation the right umbrella term?
Well, you know, it's one of those terms that scholars, you know, like me, we have really tried to unpack that. And from my perspective and my work, I think the term is actually reductive, and it becomes another way in which Hollywood, and in some ways the U.S. more broadly, kind of marginalizes black identities and culture. For example, at that point in time, there were movies called exploitation films that starred white stars. And so I'm not going to say that that wasn't the case. But these movies were really, as I said, genre films that did a lot in terms of black representation. They're imperfect, as many films are, in that, you know, they could be incredibly homophobic at times. Many of the films weren't very kind to women, especially some of the earlier films. And at the same time, they made really important contributions to motion picture history more broadly. For example, the concept of the woman action heroine comes out of blaxploitation films, right? Or woman action hero, I should say. In addition, there were strong black characters and a range of blackness that was presented in blaxploitation films that Hollywood had previously not showcased on the screen. That they become blaxploitation films really kind of takes away from the strides that the films made. And certainly we need to be critical of the films too. I would never say that we shouldn't. I'm critical of the films in some of my writing. But it's a way of kind of marginalizing blackness, because then in that way, they're not motion picture history. They're black film history, which then we don't really have to teach in mainstream narratives of film history. And so we just kind of can cast those things to the side. And from my perspective, this is why these films were so long ignored by some film scholars, because they were just deemed unimportant.
So these films that you that you study, what's a good term instead of blaxploitation to describe this genre that you're studying?
Yeah, I would just say it's a film, you know. And if we want to use the categorization of it's a black film, then I'm not necessarily opposed to do that. Mm-hmm. But scholars, I would say we've grappled with that question, too. Well, what is a black film, right? Does it have to be made by blacks? Does it have to, you know, solely star blacks? So that's a really complicated term as well. But if we wanted to call those films anything and label them differently, I would just say it's a black film. Mm-hmm. Understanding that black film does not mean that everybody can't go and watch the film, right? It's kind of like historically black colleges and universities. Like, they don't say that no one else can attend, right? Like, they come out of this tradition of discrimination and hatred, right? So I think that would be the more appropriate term that I would prefer if we had to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So these films that you study, you named a few of them, Blackula, Sweetback's Badass Song.
Yeah.
But what is the prototypical example of this of these films that you study?
I would say it's probably Shaft, which, you know, it's an MGM release, and it's directed by Gordon Parks Sr., who was actually the first black photographer at Life magazine. And so he had an aesthetic sensibility from his work in photography. He was also a novelist and a composer. So he just had this sensibility and this way of capturing what many people would say, particularly at the time he was working, is kind of black life unpandered, a black experience that a lot of mainstream, say, news organizations or films weren't really putting on the silver screen. Shaft kind of puts together all the elements that come to define blaxploitation, which is a black hero, more black supporting characters, predominantly black urban setting, funky R&B soundtrack, that the Isaac Hayes soundtrack is iconic, by a guy they used to call, they call Isaac Hayes either Black Jesus, I think they called him. So it kind of tells you how iconic he was. In addition to that, strong displays of Black sexuality, which had been, you know, Blacks had kind of been figuratively castrated on screen for a long time. The thinking in Hollywood is that, oh, people don't want to see Black people being intimate, right? So, you know, they embraced that. And then, you know, white villains, you know, they were kind of metaphors for the system of discrimination that was oppressing Black people. And so you had Blacks overcoming this white villain. It's a metaphor for them overcoming U.S. systemic racism. And then finally, there was violence. Many of the films were really violent, tamed by today's standards. I will say that, you know, I think you could see much worse on television now. But many of them were really violent as well for the time period.
I mean, I find it fascinating that, like, big theaters and corporations are looking to, exploit the Black community for money.
Yeah.
But yet, I imagine they would be taken aback at the sort of content of these films, which is very empowering and very much against those systems that they're making money off of.
That's a great point. Yeah. In some instances, yeah, this was definitely the case. And you had some filmmakers who even took the money. They were able to get films made as a result of Blaxploitation movies. And then when they went in and showed the rushes or the print to the execs, they were like, what is this, right? A movie like Spook Who Sat by the Door, The Spook Who Sat by the Door is a great example, a film that was really deemed dangerous to the U.S., right? And the story goes that the theatrical run for that movie was ended prematurely because people saw it as a handbook for Blacks to arm up and engage in guerrilla tactics in the struggle for freedom. What you find is that some of these films also, I mentioned Shaft, for example, or even a Cleopatra Jones, which stars Tamara Dobson, they would, you know, when a major studio was involved, the heroes would kind of work for the system. So Cleopatra Jones is an international agent who's fighting against drugs. Well, you can't really be mad at Cleopatra Jones for fighting against drugs, even though racism is in there too. And then I would say the same thing for Shaft to some extent. He was a law. You know, he can navigate different spaces, but he ultimately is working in favor of the law in a way. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the trick. And I think they try to mitigate some of the radical nature of the films by associating the heroes with justice.
I guess at the end of every interview, I like to just provide a space for the source and our for this wonderful conversation about the topics you're studying, about the topics we've talked about here today. What haven't we addressed that needs to be covered, or what would you like to say to our listeners?
Oh, wow. Oh, that's a good question. I would say first that just remember that Black film is Black film, and Black film history is film and film history, that we have to stop thinking that because these things are designated as Black that they don't apply to everyone, that everyone can't learn from them, enjoy them, think about them. And we got to stop that. We got to get out of that because you can learn so much. And when I say Black film, I also want to be clear that I'm talking about global Blackness. My research is really about U.S. film industries, but at the Black Film Center and Archive, we have collections from all over the world. We have one of the largest FESPACO collections, which is a film festival held every other year in Burkina Faso. We have that huge collection. So it's global Blackness that you can learn so much about where you live, the world, by engaging with these cinemas. So stop thinking that they're not for you, because here's the thing that doesn't happen. You know, when the Christopher Nolan film comes out, you know, I didn't look at it and say Inception's not for me because it has white stars, right? It's a great film. And so we're talking about good films, and you go see whatever it is you like. But stop thinking that that means it's not for you. It's for everybody to enjoy, to take away from, to learn, to grow, to be inspired by. And so I think that's really one of the things that I would like people to walk away with that understanding. Mm-hmm. And really start asking yourselves, what can film tell me about the world in which we live, about where we are right now, where we're going, where we've been? What can cinema do for us? Because my theory is that if you want to know the history of your country since the film began, go back and start early on with the movies, and it tells you everything you know, how we felt about women, how we felt about members of the LGBTQIA+ communities. It tells you everything you need to know. And it's very telling that in some ways, there's nothing new under the sun. We look at what's happening today. So learn how these things can entertain you and the stories that they can tell and what they can teach us about the world and maybe the world in which we want to live.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. And the show is called I'm No Expert, and clearly you're an expert in film. But also, we ask every source this. What is something that you're an expert in that people wouldn't expect? Like, are you good at rollerblading, tennis, et cetera?
That's so funny. I wouldn't say I'm an expert, but tennis. Yes. Like, why did you say tennis? Did we talk about it?
No, I just kind of picked it out.
Okay, that's so bizarre. I am a tennis fan, and I'm a tennis player. I played tennis. I started playing when I was in eighth grade. I played all through high school, played in a club when I went to community college, and then I played for a year when I went to my four-year school. And I continue to play tennis right now. I am a tennis player, and I watch tennis. I was a Roger Federer fan right up until he retired. And I watch now. I study the game at tennis. And I don't think a lot of people know that about me. That's so funny that you said that. I'm currently now following the race, the ATP and WTA races. And I think the women's game is actually much more fun than the men's game right now. So many stars, Coco Gauff, Aryna Sabalenka, Elena Rybakina. And it's a global game. And so I love tennis. And on the men's side, I liked watching Carlos Alcaraz. I hope he beats Djokovic every time they play. Taylor Fritz, Francis Tiafoe got great players there, too. So it's tennis. I can't believe you said that. You completely caught me off guard. How did you know?
Well, thank you so much, Navantly Lawrence. Your work is essential, and I think this conversation has been amazing. Cross fingers, we're going to – oh, come on, we'll talk to you again. We'll find a topic to talk again.
I hope so. We will absolutely find something to talk about. And I appreciate you all bringing me on. As you see, I get very excited. So just let me know. Say the word, and I'm here again, and I'll do my thing. You see me, I move my hands a lot. Right, so, yeah, I'm ready.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Okay, right on. Thank you.
I'm No Expert was produced by Carl Templeton and hosted by Avraham Forrest. Thank you for listening to another episode of I'm No Expert. You can find us on Spotify by searching IU Media School and follow along with what we're doing by following @IU Media School on Instagram. We'll see you soon with another episode.